So the second to the last paper in this session is the challenge to find the optimum polar response and placement of two loudspeakers in a room for the creation of phantom sources and simultaneous masking of real sources, presented by Mr. Siegfried Lindwitz, very well known. He received a diploma in electrical engineering from Darmstadt Technical University in Germany in 1961, and did his postgraduate studies at Stanford University. He worked for 37 years in research and development for Hewlett-Packard and developed state-of-the-art electronic test equipment such as microwave spectrum analyzers, network analyzers, and EMI receivers. He participated for 18 years in national and international standards development for electromagnetic compatibility test instrumentation through ANSI and IEC CISPR. He developed the Lindwitz-Riley crossover filter in 1975 out of a shared audio hobby with Russ Riley. He retired from Hewlett-Packard in 1998 and continued to pursue his lifelong interest in audio and particularly in loudspeaker design. Between 1994 and 1999, he designed a line of dipole loudspeakers with moving coil drive units for the audio artistry. In 1999, he set up the Lindwitz Lab website to educate on loudspeaker design and sound reproduction issues. Detailed information is provided to build electronics and loudspeakers according to the best practices learned in 45 years on that website. His goal is true to the original stereo sound reproduction in normal living spaces. From his perspective, loudspeakers and rooms are now understood and done. Microphones were done some time ago, and optimal stereo recording techniques are still to be demonstrated. Thank you.
Thank you. I chose a rather lengthy title here for my paper because I wanted to cover the waterfront, but the key word is radiation data. And if I were in the political arena, and you know the slogan there, it's the economy stupid, I would say it's a polar pattern stupid, it's radiation data. Okay, so please keep that in mind as I'm talking here today. And I say this because I know from experience, and not only my own, but also when I hear the experience of other people, that two-channel playback in a normal living space can provide an experience that is fully satisfying. Loudspeakers and room disappear, and the illusion of listening into a different space takes over. Now, right here, when I say it is satisfying to someone who is still used to hearing live music, who goes to symphonies, to orchestra, hears live sound. So you have to be very careful in all of this, not to put on your loudspeaker designer's hat or thinking you are listening to loudspeakers. My reference is live sound, not other loudspeakers. And I actually indeed listen to very few loudspeakers because by these days I can just look at it and by visual inspection tell whether it's worth listening to a loudspeaker or not. Okay? That may sound arrogant, but I can prove it to you. And so I challenge the audio engineering community to scientifically verify, dismiss, or refine what has been observed by me and by other people there about the perceptual effects of radiation pattern and loudspeaker room placement. I think the radiation pattern is one of the parameters that is overlooked. And I say the optimum radiation pattern for loudspeaker and the optimum placement. They are not generally known and understood. And we have plenty of evidence for that because we find loudspeakers that are designed with radiating patterns that are omni, that are dipole, that are bipole, that are directional in some way or non-directional or various combinations of all of these areas. We find that loudspeakers are placed in corners, they are placed on shelves, they are placed into the walls, they're against the walls, on stands, on the floor, out in the room, etc., etc. All of these things are practiced and used there. And then we find the room themselves, sometimes they are treated, sometimes they are not treated, with diffusers, absorbers, and so on. Some are dead, others are lively, and everything in between. And bottom line, it all works to some degree. But is any of these optimal? And that's what I'm trying to find. Now, there is no clear choice about loudspeakers and about rooms and what to do. But there, I think there are a few things that when you listen around and talk to people are generally agreed on. And one, of course, and that's obvious, is that a symmetrical loudspeaker setup is best for soundstage balance and phantom images. And that makes just perfect sense. You want to be symmetrical with respect to your listening position and to the room boundaries there. Another item is that electrostatic loudspeakers, they often excel in sonic detail, in clarity, in openness, though they also have their problems with dynamic range and placement in the room. But there's something distinctive about dipole loudspeakers. And just to say briefly, it is not the lightness of the membrane and that they are very fast and accelerate, that's pure nonsense. But it has a lot to do with the fact that there is no box there and that there is essentially a dipolar radiation pattern. And then there is also agreement that the room is problematic. And we heard a lot of talk about this, particularly at low frequencies. It's fairly easy to mathematically describe the problems there, but somewhat more difficult to solve the problem. So there's agreement that the rooms are problematic. Now I'm going to make a statement that is rather daring, and that is to say the room is not the problem. The loudspeaker's polar response is the problem. And I will elaborate on this in this paper some more. And I propose some tests that I would like to see done on a systematic way in the audio engineers community here, statistical evaluation to see that this really is indeed the problem. So let's backtrack for a moment. And I have to say that stereo is about creating an auditory illusion. You have two loudspeakers, and what you're hearing is basically a magic trick. You're hearing sources and sounds coming from locations where there is no real sound coming from. It only comes from two loudspeakers there. And so as a loudspeaker designer, I have learned over these years that in order to make a good loudspeaker, you have to design it in such a way that anything that distracts from this illusion in your brain must be minimized. And that is like nonlinear distortion, linear distortions, various parameters, how it interacts with the room, that has to be minimized to be able to create this illusion. Because basically, we don't like illusions, and there is a good reason for that. Illusions are not safe for survival. And when you think about it, our auditory system evolved primarily as a system to survive and to communicate, of course, also. Okay? And so if you look back at an environment like we have here, the savannah someplace with wild animals roaming around there and a human in there, it's important to, when you hear a sound, to know the direction, where it comes from, how far away is it, possibly what size is the source of the sound here. Then you need to be able to track the source against the background of all the various other noises that are also present, as the reflections and things that are present in the environment. Yeah. You need to extract some meaning from the source. You know, is it a big elephant, or is it a tiger, or what is it? And you need to be able to focus your attention onto that. And that kind of processing is something that has evolved over millions of years, is operating right now in our brains there, whether you like it or not, but it's happening, okay? So that's the background. So I have to say, everything that we hear is happening between the ears. When you look at the ear signals on an oscilloscope, two traces there, you just with your eyes extract for me from that the information of how many sources are there, in what direction are they, how far away are they. It's impossible. You don't do it with the eyes. You do it with the ears and brains, okay? And there are all these things that are studied in psychoacoustics, we use for finding the source locations and so on. Intensity differential, arrival time differences, envelope variation, spectral masking. You see all the things. I don't need to go into this. Just the point is, it's happening in the brain. That is a big DSP engine that has a lot of capability, okay? Now, let's look at a loudspeaker in a room. Let's look first at a single loudspeaker, somewhere at an angle from the listener. Let's see if there's some signal played through that loudspeaker, some musical recording there. You have reflections. The two signals arriving at the two ears are slightly different due to head-related transfer functions, all that very well known. But then surprisingly, as you turn your head, the speaker is still there, you turn your head, and the perceived sound doesn't really change, though the signals at the two eardrums change, and it can change dramatically. Okay. Now, how far away do we perceive the source to be? Well, even in a darkened room, if you don't have visual cues, we are probably pretty good at finding out, okay, the speaker is over there, and it's about close to the wall, so it's not that close to the wall. We can automatically sense that, okay? Now, if I take, instead of an observer here, and a dummy head with microphones and do a binaural recording, then put on some headphones on my head and play back the same situation. And then what I hear, this monaural source, very likely I hear that it comes from over somewhere to the right there. But how far away is it? Usually it's in your head. It's between the ears. It's not out there, but in your head. So, what's happening here? We are missing some cues that tell us, that give us some sensing of where the source is, because now if I move my head, the signal still stays in between the ears and it's still over there relative to my ears there. If you put a head tracker on your head, that changes the head-related transfer functions while I move my head, then a strange phenomenon happens. The source, the signal that was initially located between the ear, inside my head, all of a sudden moves outside of my head and is over there at some distance away. I personally experienced this experiment here some years ago. So it's pretty dramatic. And you can actually, if this is done, of course, over computer control, as I move full 360 degrees around, the source, this mono source, always stays in the same place, say if it was over there where the lights are. It's always over there, so the experience coming from the back or the rear, and full circle. Okay? My wife gives me time signature out there. Move some more, and all of a sudden, the source slides right back into the head. Very interesting. Okay. Using too much time here. Two loudspeakers in a room represent to the brain a highly confusing situation. If you have monaural signals coming from the two loudspeakers there, we know it creates a phantom source in the center, and that's sort of an act of desperation. Where else could it be? As you move your head, you don't really know where it's coming from, and we are more than willing moving little sideways and oops, it's that speaker, or move that way and it's the other speaker, right? So because we are trained to find the location of the real source, okay? So the trick now is there in loudspeakers to build loudspeakers and put them in a room in such a way that we fool ourselves and not recognize the loudspeaker anymore and not recognize the room. And so here are some observations of, that I would say, after 30 years of designing loudspeakers to please myself, and that has some benefit. I don't need to design it to meet some marketing demands. I can just do what I care to do. And here's a very significant finding. I take two loudspeakers, a dipolar loudspeaker and a monopolar loudspeaker, and I find that they sound almost identical, though they have very different polar patterns, okay? The phantom image is very similar. The clarity is very similar. There's some slight difference in the depth presentation of the two. And the fact is, room and loudspeakers disappear to the point if you close your eyes, and open them, and you see these boxes sitting there, and say, what are these doing there? They're not part of this acoustic scene that is happening in front of me. And I believe that a lot, probably many people, have never quite experienced that effect, how strong that can be there. Okay? And so here are the two types of loudspeakers. A monopole, imagine the following. If this room was dark and I had a bare light bulb right here at the podium, bare light bulb, it would illuminate the room very uniformly, very evenly. Okay. A dipole is, again, in this dark room, would be like two flashlights, one shining this way and the other one shining in the opposite direction. So it illuminates less of the room, but it all illuminates it with the same light and color. If I had a single flashlight, it's like a cardioid. You know, it only shines in one direction. If I extend this analogy some more, if we take the typical box loudspeaker, which we know is omnidirectional at low frequencies, becomes more directional at high frequencies. Low frequencies in optics are like red light. The high frequency is like blue light. So we have the situation that we have a red light source that shines uniformly everywhere, like a single light bulb. And we have a blue flashlight on top of it, and that illuminates parts of the room in blue light. So when I say illuminate, wherever you see illumination, that's where you get reflection. So there's a different talkback coming from the room. Now, here's some postulates here, and this is what I would like to see proven in a rigorous scientific way there, and not just anecdotal as I'm presenting to you here. The postulate is that if you can make the spectrum of the reflections equal to the direct sound, in other words, the light coming back from the walls is always white, not red and blue or some mixture of that, but it's always the same color, then that is an important requirement. And if the reflections have a delay of at least 6 milliseconds, and that doesn't translate to optics very well, then you set up a criteria where the brain is able to disassociate the perception of the room from the perception of the direct sound coming to the room. And when you look at the precedents in psychoacoustic studies, you find a lot of evidence for this. And then again, here's a symmetry that reflections should be symmetrical. So that's nothing new. Now, the first one, the spectrum of the reflection should equal to the direct sound, that it requires that the loudspeaker has a very uniform polar response. And so you can use either an omnidirectional loudspeaker, bidirectional or dipolar loudspeaker, or cardioid unidirectional loudspeaker to do that. But the conventional box loudspeaker that we have is not the optimal source there. And so my challenge is to scientifically verify that this observation is indeed correct, and that indeed we can hide the room and the loudspeakers and create a very believable illusion. Now, very quickly, there's something you find in my papers. The test requirements would be a certain room, minimum room size, that the speakers are at least 1 meter away from the walls, symmetrical setup, and now the important point, that the listeners in this test are able to still recognize what is natural. That the listeners are not the people who just listen to loudspeakers, which a lot of audiophiles I have found are doing. Our brain already has a pre-programmed notion of what a loudspeaker is supposed to sound to. And so it's very important that the listening panel would be people who still know what real sound sounds like, non-amplified sound sounds like. So that they have auditory memory experience of amplified sounds, and they're able to recognize it and describe it. Because what you will find is that with the different polar patterns, you will find spatial properties in the recordings that you have not heard before. And it's, to me, it's appalling when some of the recordings that I hear, I wonder, what went on in the recording engineer's mind when he put this recording together, because it's a collage of spaces. It's not coherent. It has nothing to do with reality. It's a different experience. So maybe this only applies to classical recordings, what I'm saying here, there, but at least we should be able to solve the problems there. So the task is then to characterize the differences, determine the sensitivity of the glass to the loudspeaker placement, explain the glass in psychoacoustic terms, and suggest improvements on radiation pattern. Now, the dipole may not be the optimum, but it's in that direction, I'm pretty sure. Okay? There may be a need for special recordings, but not really so, because there are so many recordings on the market that you can easily use them to find out differences and hear into them, and so that's not an issue. And I don't want to go into recording. We talked in an earlier paper about that in Munich, and this is certainly a field where I feel that things are not done when it comes to recording, where there is still a lot of room of improvement here. So, to summarize here, I want to say again that two-channel playback in a normal limiting space can provide an experience that is fully satisfying. Loudspeakers in the room can disappear and the illusion of listening into a different space can take over. But that this case, the use of two loudspeakers and the loudspeakers in the room has not systematically and completely researched, even though, like our next speaker here, Sean Olive and Floyd Toole, have been put enormous work into this field there. But when it comes to two-channel, it hasn't, in my opinion, fully been investigated and explored. There's still room for work to do. It's unfortunately a complicated case, so I try to give a simple model here of how some testing could be done. So I think that covers it, and I hope I made the point that the polar response is something that needs further work. Okay. Thank you.
In your photograph, it looked like you had significant absorption in the room. You think that there also should be constraints on the experiment of the ratio to direct to reverberant sound, and what do you think there should be?
What looked like absorption is no intentional absorption in the room. In the paper you see, I propose that the room just be a normal standard room, no special acoustic treatment other than what you would put in there, what Floyd calls the enormous stuff of life. You know, that should be in the room there. Normal living room that you would feel comfortable in, that you want to live in. The music is part of that.
Now, Keel, I want to re-emphasize the fact that you said the polar pattern is important, and of course it is. And secondarily, I think in your postulate number two, it shouldn't change with frequency, and that's incredibly important.
Right.
So whatever polar pattern you have, it shouldn't change as a function of frequency.
Okay, thank you that you bring that up. I guess I didn't state that clearly enough when I said uniform polar pattern, frequency-independent polar pattern, and whether it's omni or dipole or cardioid, fine, but keep it that way throughout the frequency range.
Absolutely.
Siegfried, I've talked with you about these things, but the polar pattern, do you think that a polar pattern needs to be dipolar in a complete sense, or omni in a complete sense, or would you think that a horizontal, the two ears are mounted sideways, so things are more important horizontally, so would a loudspeaker that has horizontal omni performance be something that you would think would be distinguishable from one, say, your flute is fairly, it's really omni?
Well, I think the horizontal is a dominant domain there, and the vertical is not as critical, although I do pay some attention to it by making the sources. I believe that acoustic radiators should be acoustically small, which means that the polar response also is uniform also in the vertical direction.
Well, I was just thinking, say, of a line dipole, for example,
yes.
Floor-to-ceiling dipole. I wonder whether it would be an interesting study.
Yeah, the line dipole is another case which I think is a very interesting study because I think it has some other properties that would be Yeah, it's a very interesting case. But when you say line, I'm thinking of line floor to ceiling.
Floor to ceiling.
Like an infinite line.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not a short line.
Hi, Ty. Talk about the Harmon International. I may be one of the only ones in the room who has some questions about this assumption that the reflected sounds would have the same spectrum. And it sounds reasonable, and I know there's some justification, but I also wonder, for example, in a concert hall, you mentioned concert halls, those reflections will not be of the same spectrum because, if nothing else, for air absorption. So I don't know whether it's a perfectly natural thing to have a reflection. In fact, it may be more natural to have a reflection with some high-frequency attenuation.
Well, the reason why I said that the reflection should be like copies of the direct sound is that we're talking about the reproduction issue, where we would like to sort of not hear the room anymore. Okay? And the brain, apparently, not proven, but apparently the brain, if the brain sees that sound coming from all these different directions are just delayed copies of the direct sound from the loudspeaker, then it can ignore it. It's happening in here. Okay, so if you put microphones there, the room response hasn't gone away. The room response isn't necessarily flat either. That's another thing that I believe it, you should not just go and measure in your room a flat equalized to a flat room response. You're really tampering with the processor up here when you're doing that.
Not really a question, but a comment. I've been listening to your Orion design in my living room for the last 3 years, I guess, and I think they're absolutely fabulous. And I don't think it's, I can't say that that dipole and the reflections and all of this sort of thing is not important, but I'm listening mostly to pan-potted, heavily produced pop music and so on. And so I'm not after getting that, you know, illusion. And I think a lot of what makes the loudspeakers great is different things, like no radiation from a box, maybe the drivers being just loaded by air and not having a nonlinear load and things like that. So what do you think? Are there other factors?
Absolutely. It's sort of like those are the necessary but not sufficient conditions. Like that has to be taken care of. And I really passed on this because I talked in previous papers about what needs to be done. Those would be distracting cues that the brain takes to localize the sources, and right away now it's, oh, there's a speaker here and a speaker there, and it cannot form the group. Thanks.